calling 911 when in an accident may just not be enough. Car accident, remember. After 911, call 411. 1-800-411-PAIN. 1-800-411-PAIN is a legal and medical referral service. Non-employee spokesperson.
Just the Tips with Amber on the Ticket Thursday mornings in the 8 o'clock hour, sponsored by East Coast Public Adjusters. We've got your assets covered. Call 855-GET-ECPA or visit eastcoastpublicadjusters.com. Don't settle for less and listen to Just the Tips on AM 790 and FM 104.3 HD2, The Ticket. Welcome back here to 790 The Ticket. Greg Likens alongside the Miami Herald's Barry Jackson as we continue on here, filling in for Josh Friedman on this Thursday night, and a special day in South Florida as the Dolphins got underway with their 2017 season with the first day of training camp. We've been reacting to a lot of the news that's emanated from that. Over the next 2 hours, we'll continue to do so. I mentioned before, we're going to hear what Ryan Tannehill had to say about his knee and how he's doing. We will also get into a few other topics as well. We got some phone calls, some people on the line. We've got some texts coming in. Keep those coming in at 67974, 67974. You can also call the show at 786-360-0790. We were just reacting to what Stephen Ross had to say about this would not be a good town for an MLS team to come to, essentially, because then that fan base or, you know, that franchise would be competing for people to butts in seats. People would be interested with the Dolphins and, I guess, the other local teams if we read between the lines. Barry, you were defending the fans of South Florida and essentially saying that it's not a very good baseball town at this moment, but the other sports seem to be thriving for the most part in terms of fan turnout.
Yeah, sellout streaks, lengthy sellout streaks for the Dolphins, for the Heat. The Heat sellout streak is the 10th longest in NBA history, even though it's been 3 years since LeBron has gone. UM basketball has sold out season tickets the last couple of years, so I think it's more of a Marlins problem. Now, as far as how much an MLS team could draw here, that I am a little bit skeptical about. I'd be surprised if they get to 20,000 with the location that they've selected in Overtown, where people have to take public transportation or take these ridiculous ferry boats, right, park downtown, mm-hmm. and then take a ferry to the stadium and then jump on another bus. The interesting thing is Atlanta is averaging over 40,000 for their MLS team, and they haven't even moved into their brand-new stadium yet. The Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Arthur Blank's new stadium for the Falcons, that opens at the end of August. So it's that the Hawks don't draw. You know, the NBA in Atlanta is one of the worst atmospheres in the league, but yet their MLS team is getting 40,000 plus. But every sports town is different. I'd be surprised if we average even 20,000 for MLS. I'm thinking more 17,000 range. What's your sense of what's a realistic number in this market for MLS?
Well, and I think there's a clear dividing line between, you know, when you're talking about the Heat and the Dolphins, who are very established in this market, especially the Dolphins for all the years they've been here, and the Heat having the consistency with the winning. Between, you know, we know based on the cultural makeup of South Florida, there are a lot of people who love the sport of soccer or football, depending on where they're from and how they identify with that. The question I would have, though, is if you have an MLS team that's playing, you know, all of their home games in South Florida, is there going to be that same buzz and interest level as compared to, you know, when you have last night PSG, the most popular team in France, and Juventus, you know, who's been the rulers of Italian soccer the last few years, coming down to play an exhibition, or Real Madrid and Barcelona, the biggest rivalry in sports that's taking place on our soil on Saturday night. I mean, there's a clear difference between those high profile games and then a regular season MLS matchup. So while I agree that we have a lot of soccer fans down here and that there would be an interest level, I feel that that interest level would only bring out the fans to a high number if the product is compelling. So if you're starting off a franchise and it's an expansion, like, you know, Minnesota has had this year in MLS, like Atlanta's had this year in MLS, I don't know if you're going to see a great turnout in the beginning because the chances are the team isn't going to be very good.
Right.
But that's just my take on it. Now, if they establish themselves as being a pretty darn good team and they're competitive, then as we see in South Florida, people will show up.
Now, we continue to get a bad rap, I think, primarily for a couple things. People see a ton of empty seats for UM football games, except for the marquee ones. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Florida State or when Notre Dame comes here. So that's one factor. And the other is that Marlins attendance has been among the bottom five teams the last 4 years, despite having a stadium that's 6 years old. Attendance the first year in Marlins Park was pretty good. It was over 28,000. I know the Marlins had hoped every game would sell out the first year. 34,000. That did not happen. Since then, though, it's been 20,000, 21,000 per game. It's actually been far less than that if you count only people who pass through the turnstiles. So I think that's why we continue to get a bad rap as a sports town. But the extenuating circumstance with that is the Marlins have been irrelevant nationally for years, right? They haven't had a winning record this decade. They haven't made the playoffs since 2003. Only Seattle has a longer playoff drought. And once again now, they're in this malaise of 5 to 10 games under 500. It feels like with this Marlins roster, we could play 20 years and always be 5 to 10 games under 500, right?
Right.
So I think those are the factors there. Now, as for soccer, we were talking in break about the fact that Saturday's game, which is a big deal, by the way, for people who are not soccer fans, this is a huge exhibition that Steve Ross has put together. This game is not sold out yet. Now, I know it's a big stadium. It's going to seat over 75,000, but there were still thousands of tickets remaining as of the beginning of the week. Organizers expect it to sell out, but does it surprise you that we entered the All-Star Game week in baseball with tickets available to that game, and we enter this week with tickets available to this game?
Well, it would lend credence to what Stephen Ross said, and it does surprise me a ton, especially for the soccer match. Now, let's pause on that for a second. We got to hit the headlines in a moment, but when we return from headlines, it'll take just 30 seconds or so. I'm going to answer your question on that, and then we're going to get to Chris and Joe who've been waiting by on the phone line. So we'll continue this conversation in a moment, but let's get the headlines.
Here's what's trending now in Miami on The Ticket. WAXYAM South Miami and FM 104.3 HD2 Miramar.
The radio home of the Miami Heat.
The Miami Dolphins kicked off their 2017 training camp this morning in Davie with practice number one of the new season. And they're largely healthy as Mike Pouncey and Rashad Jones both worked on the side with trainers, mainly as a precaution. Meanwhile, Anthony Fasano was excused from practice for personal reasons. Quarterback Ryan Tannehill said that his left knee feels really good and that there haven't been any changes since he returned to action this spring. In other news, owner Stephen Ross addressed a number of topics with the media today, including Jarvis Landry, saying he's unsure whether Landry will be signed to a new contract before the season begins. Elsewhere in the NFL, Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell did not report to Pittsburgh's training camp today. After failing to reach an agreement on a long-term deal this offseason, he has yet to sign his $12.12 million franchise tender. To baseball, where a day after scoring a franchise record 22 runs in a win over the Rangers, Marlins returning home tonight to open up a weekend series against the Reds. And right now, that scoring has not followed them into this game. It's the bottom of the third, and it's scoreless from Marlins Park as the Reds and the Marlins so far have combined for just two hits, and they're both for the Reds. So at this point, it's a pitcher's duel early on, but that can change. So we'll keep you updated throughout the night what the Marlins are doing over there as they open up this homestand at Marlins Park. Those are your headlines. Getting back to the turnout and your question, Barry, regarding, I mean, Real Madrid and FC Barcelona, this is unbelievable. I know we're always impressed here in the United States with the numbers that you get for Super Bowl ratings, right? You get over 100 million, and every year it seems to get bigger and bigger. I was reading over the weekend, your colleague Greg Cody had a column about it. 400 million people tuned in to one of the more recent regular season matchups between, this is worldwide now, between Real Madrid and Barcelona. So this is by far and away the biggest rivalry in sports across the world. You've got some of the biggest names in all of sports, some of the most familiar names. And ESPN came out with that Fame 100 list earlier in the football offseason. I always say offseason, I guess we're always thinking in terms of American football. And Ronaldo isn't likely to play, so that's a blow. But it was something along the lines, somewhere between 10 and 12 of the players of the top 100 in terms of most recognized athletes in the world and famous athletes in the world will be on the pitch on Saturday night in this game. So to answer your question, I'm pretty surprised this hasn't sold out. But as you pointed out in your article, if the ticket range from around $250 for the worst seats up to $4,500 for club-level seats, then I can understand to a certain degree, because I'm as big a soccer fan as there is, having lived in Europe when I was young and have followed the sport really closely throughout my life. But I don't want to shell out that kind of money for really bad seats. And those would be the seats that I could really afford. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I can understand from the fan base's standpoint. At the same time, though, knowing there's a lot of people coming in from out of town, whether it be internationally or from the United States or domestically here, I am surprised there's still tickets available.
Well, I think that if they do get to a sellout or awfully close to it, it's not going to be an embarrassment, because we're talking about 74,000 or 75,000 people. What's funny to me is the excuse that people often use about why Miami isn't a great sports town, saying there's so many things to do. To use the old Boog Shambi line, it's not like everyone's out windsurfing, right? I know there are a lot of things to do, but not everyone is on the beach at a, you know, on a skateboard by the beach or surfing. So I think that argument's a little bit overstated.
That's true. There are a lot of people who lead very regular lives, who don't go to the beach very often, right, who reside down here,
yes,
in this area. All right, let's go to the phones. We got some people waited by patiently. We appreciate that. Let's go first to Tampa, where Chris is standing by. Chris, thanks for joining the show. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing well, Chris. What's going on?
So I just want to let you guys know, obviously, I'm from Tampa, and I'm a native of Miami, born and raised in the city of Dade. And I will tell you guys this is, it's correct. The Marlins really didn't give us any, when I mean any, they didn't give us any credit for when they started. The second that Pat Riley got down to the Miami Heat became something. Obviously, the Dolphins, growing up down there, my dad always told me, it's the Dolphins, baby, it's the Dolphins. So we had that for the Dolphins. Miami Heat came down. Pat Riley made us the Miami Heat. The Marlins didn't give us any credit. Even though they've won two World Series in their infantile state, they were always sold off. My thing is this is, we have David Beckham, a predominant name for MLS, for all soccer, saying he wants to put money down. I say to you guys, it's worth it. It's worth the investment. And I'm from Tampa, and I come down for Hurricane games, Dolphin games, and even Marlin games, and obviously Heat games. I come down all day, every day, wondering why, because I'm from that town. It's my town.
I got you. So you believe that if David Beckham does build a stadium, brings a franchise to South Florida, that it will be a success?
It will be a success, even if it's in Overtown. By the way, I'm coming back to the Alonzo Mourning. Alonzo Mourning used to do Zoe Summer Groove for Overtown. Gentrification, even in Tampa, is happening, and it's happening in Miami. It is happening. And more areas are starting to become more solidified by corporate entities. However, bringing MLS to Overtown in Miami is a good thing.
All right, Chris. Thank you for the phone call, Chris. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt, and based on the enthusiasm of Chris, that, you know, if there are a bunch of people like him, it's going to be a success. I still would question, though, and I have nothing against trying to revitalize a part of the community by building a stadium there, but as you pointed out before, Barry, there's some real hurdles to overcome in terms of fan convenience, actually just getting to the stadium, at least based on the proposal.
Right. No parking garages within a third of a mile. Even as much as half a mile. And the other factor is, are you going to draw people from Broward and Palm Beach? There's someone who is in the Wayne Rothbaum Marlins group who told me that the one concern that they have, actually among several concerns, is the fact that the stadium location costs them fans from Broward and Palm Beach. I think this would be the case also with an MLS fan, because if you're a longtime Fort Lauderdale Strikers fan from the NASL days in the 1970s who happens to live in Tamarack, right? Or somewhere in North Broward, are you going to want to schlep down to Overtown and then not only make that drive, but also then have to park a mile away, take a water taxi to the game, right? or just take a bus. It just seems too inconvenient unless you build a real emotional attachment to the team. And the only way to build an emotional attachment to a team is to see success initially. At least that's the most likely way.
Right. I agree with you there. The success part is real big. Let's go to Miami, where Joe has been standing by. Joe, thanks for the call. What's going on tonight?
Hey, guys. Hey, don't you think there's an element of, like, cherry-picking when they criticize us as a sports town? And I'm not saying Miami's a great sports town, but don't I mean, I think we're pretty much like the rest of the country. There's a few select towns that are quote-unquote great sports towns. I mean, the people in the Northeast are much more obsessed about sports than I think anywhere else in the country. I think there's an element. So like comparing us to New York, Chicago's in the Midwest, they're just more fanatical than we are. In the rest of the country, I think we're pretty much in line with everybody else.
Yeah, that's not a bad point, Joe, because I don't think, speaking candidly, I don't think anybody looks at Miami or South Florida and says that is a great one of the top sports towns in the country. But
I think the rest of the country is like us. I mean, if you sit there and look, I mean, what someone said there, it's pretty impressive the Heat sellout streak. So that's, I mean, those are hard numbers. You can't really deny it.
Yes, for sure. But I think the point that Barry made, which is I think very accurate, is that it's just not a baseball town, at least not right now, based on
Look at the St. Louis Cardinals. They're the greatest baseball fans in the world. Are they great football fans?
Well, the team's no longer there.
Whatever, yeah. The people cherry pick. They sort of pick they compare it to somebody. But I think most towns in America are like us as far as sports goes.
Okay,
there's a few exceptions, and then everything else is just a bunch of, you know. And think about one more point I'd like to say is baseball in South Florida is terrible in the summertime. It's not a play. It's just not. So I think that's a detriment for baseball. It's just so hot. People leave. People do leave, but
they have the stadium now on the roof on the stadium now for a reason.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but a lot of people with money are out of here, and the people who can afford the tickets, they're not here.
All right,
anyway,
Joe, thanks for the phone call. All right, there you go.
Okay, I don't think you can judge hockey until this team consistently wins.
Yeah.
Which might not happen in our lifetime.
Yeah, we haven't. I think we conveniently avoided that that topic there because I think that goes without saying. But Joe, I won't argue with you that there are certain people, you know, in the summer they take vacation, they're not here. At the same time, you can't say that the heat and humidity has an impact on baseball when they built the new stadium, and one of the main features is that it has a roof that they can either open or close, and they got that big, you know, screen and the big wall in the back of the stadium they can open and close. So you have a climate-controlled environment if it's too hot, if it's raining. Because wasn't that the excuse that we all made when they were playing at, like, now Hard Rock Stadium or Sun Life or, you know, whatever version of the Dolphin Stadium that they were playing in terms of the identity of it at the time or whichever sponsor had latched on. But that was the excuse, right? It was a football stadium, and then you have to sit in the sun for day
right.
games.
Now the only valid excuses are prolonged losing and irrelevance and also disenchantment with Jeffrey Loria.
Yes, which I think is a valid thing as well. All right, that's Barry Jackson. I'm Greg Likens. We're continuing on here. Lots of things to talk about. We're going to read some of your text messages when we come back at 67974. Don't want to neglect those. But also, we've been teasing this. We'll hear from Ryan Tannehill himself what he had to say fresh off the practice field earlier today about his knee, his recovery, and his comfort level. That'll be next here on 7-9 of the Ticket. Here and the Ticket has you covered from training camp through the regular season and Super Bowl. Anna Jar and Levine, accident attorneys, call 1-800-747-FREE. That's 1-800-747-3733. Football, hear it on AM 790 and FM 104.3 HD2, the Ticket. Greg Likens here alongside Barry Jackson, filling in for Josh Friedman, who will return tomorrow night on the program. But we've been talking all about the different storylines that have emerged from day one of Dolphins training camp, including some of Stephen Ross's comments, which got us discussing the Marlins sale and a possible MLS team. So even though it was a real Dolphins news-filled day, it's kind of taken us down a few different avenues. If you want to get involved in the program, you can call us at 786-360-0790. You can also text the show at 67974. Barry, I do want to read a couple of these text messages because – I mentioned before we had a lot of people texting in about Ryan Tannehill. We're going to hear from him in a moment. Some people are just clearly against the idea of having a soccer team down here, including somebody saying that they don't like David Beckham. I'm going to edit that, you know, for radio purposes. Somebody else says it's cheaper to watch Real Madrid and Barcelona by traveling to Spain and seeing the game there.
That's great.
Somebody's asking, is the game going to be on TV? Yes, it's on ESPN. And as Barry wrote about in the Miami Herald, they also are having all sorts of major coverage this week in terms of SportsCenter locations down here. And they're going to have a bunch of anchors and reporters. And then, of course, the game broadcast on Saturday night. Somebody else here says only non-soccer fans will have a problem with this. Non-parking garages. We're in 2017. There's a million transportation services. Come on. So I guess you could take an Uber down there, but depending on where you live, I mean, it seems very involved, right? So even if you drive part of the way, find a place to park that you feel is safe and secure, and then take an Uber from there, that's a lot of effort to go through, and not to mention, you know, whether it be paying for the gas or then paying for an Uber or a taxi or whatever it might be to then get to a stadium.
Right. Everything that the team has presented involves two layers of transportation. So parking your car somewhere and then taking either a bus or a water taxi. And then, of course, having to take it back just to get to your car. So how many people want to deal with this is the question.
Yes. And so, yeah, hey, maybe there are 20,000 people on a given night that want to deal with that. But I don't know. I'm skeptical. Somebody else says it will work. It will succeed. Another says the Seattle Sounders do it. Look at the Bryant Gumbel piece. Yeah, I mean, there was a really nice feature on Real Sports the last couple of years on HBO about Seattle. I mean, and that is a really soccer-crazed part of the country in the Northeast. Even, you know, the team in Vancouver does well. Seattle and Portland, I mean, all those teams draw really well. So I don't know if we can draw a comparison to South Florida when it comes to that. Somebody else says we have too many transient citizens down here. Everyone is from somewhere else. That's true. The only thing I would say to that, though, is most of the other places that aren't the United States, the number one sport is soccer. So I think that's probably the thought process of David Beckham. In addition to, I think he probably wants to live down here as well because he likes Miami. But
and even in spite of that, though, I'm surprised that Beckham's patience has not run out with Miami, because they have presented red flag after obstacle after orange cones. You know, it's just been one thing after another. They wouldn't give him a site on the water. They wouldn't give him the Port of Miami site. So this is the fourth site, and it's by far the worst of the sites for a number of reasons. And the fact that he's allowed this to continue and been pushed around by the city of Miami for a stadium that, by the way, they're privately financing, and he has to buy the land, although at a discounted rate, to get the stadium done. I'm just amazed why he continues to want to make it work in Miami when there are other possible cities after the way that Miami's treated him.
Yeah, very true. Because he goes somewhere else that maybe doesn't have other professional sports teams that would just be, you know, really, really hungry for the idea of having a professional sports team, whether it be soccer or anything else, that maybe would be more profitable. But we'll see what happens from there. Transitioning back to the Dolphins practice today, and Barry, you were there covering everything. One of the storylines that we're watching is Ryan Tannehill's recovery from the knee injury from last season. He didn't have surgery, so it's healed naturally. He's wearing a brace on his left knee. After practice today, Ryan Tannehill coming off the field, of course, he fielded a number of questions about the knee. He gave a quick response that everything's fine, and then somebody else asked a little few minutes later more about it. This was his more comprehensive, thorough response about just how his knee is doing.
Just so everyone hears, the knee is really good. Feels really good. I haven't had any changes since the spring, so I was full participant in the spring and still going really well. All right, now we don't have to address that anymore, right? We're good.
How's your
right? Your knee's feeling really good. So, you know, it's been a journey, right? You know, I think, you know, dealing with the injury like that for the first time was a tough process for me. But the building, everyone around me really supported me throughout that whole process. And glad to be back out here and feeling really healthy again.
It's good to see him back out there, right, Barry? I mean, and he seems to be moving well. Again, I don't want to rain everybody's parade, and he has a sense of humor about it, and everybody was in great spirits today, as they typically are day one of practice, with no injuries taking place. But at the same time, you know, I've said all along that while this is encouraging, I do wonder, both from a psychological standpoint and from a physical standpoint, when he takes that first hit in a preseason game, assuming that happens, that's going to be the true test. And not, you know, him running around with no contact in a practice in the environment that they put in place there in Davie.
Right. And when we see him run a read option play as well, is he going to be as effective? Is he going to be as elusive? You know, we saw a human side of Ryan Tannehill with this injury where we saw tears rolling down his eyes and his face after the injury in the Arizona game. And he told me last month that one of the reasons why he did shed tears is because he felt the injury came on the exact day that the game was finally starting to slow down for him. He said, that day I could feel everything was clicking. He said, it takes a while to get used to a new play caller. And he said he had finally reached the point with Adam Gase where he could anticipate what Gase wanted to happen with plays that he called. And he said, just as that happened, I suffered this injury. So that, I think, was part of the reason why he was so emotional that day about getting that injury, which he knew at the time was probably going to sideline him for the rest of the season. Now, that being said, he's very optimistic that he can pick up in year two where he left off in year one. He has a personal quarterback coach who's done some work with him, a guy by the name of Jeff Christensen, no relation to Clyde Christensen, the Dolphins offensive coordinator. Jeff Christensen has worked with several quarterbacks in the league, and Jeff Christensen told me that by midseason, Ryan Tannehill is going to be one of the top eight quarterbacks in the league. Now, that to me seems a little ambitious, but one guy who's got supreme confidence in Ryan Tannehill.
Well, yeah, and I remember when you wrote that, and that's interesting that he feels he has the makeup to do that and the physical skill set to do that. I'm certainly Dolphins fans will be thrilled at that. It's interesting that as we enter this new season, despite Tannehill putting up nice numbers before he got hurt and the Dolphins ultimately going to the playoffs for the first time, there are some national outlets that feel otherwise. And that's when we come back, we're not going to break right now, but when we come back next segment, I do want to get into that because MMQB, Peter King's website through Sports Illustrated, has come out with its top 400 players list in the NFL. And which is always interesting and fun to digest and to examine, and you know what it means big picture. I don't know, it's one person's opinion or one entity's opinion, but Ryan Tannehill not ranked very favorably. I'll just say that. So we'll get into the details coming up, as Barry just mentioned that. But another thing that Ryan Tannehill had to say today, or one of the questions he fielded, was about his goals for the 2017 season. This is how he responded.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter to me on individual stats. I want to win games, put us in the playoffs, and win the division, be in the Super Bowl. You know, that's our goal. That's what we set out each and every year to do, is to win games, make the playoffs first, win the division, and then be in the Super Bowl. So it's tough to say what exactly is success, but for me, that's my goal right now, is to put this team in position to win and win a lot of games and compete for a championship.
And I think that's the right thing to say, Barry. We all get caught up in the fantasy football numbers because it's so popular. And you know, I think everybody remembers what Dan Marino was able to do in terms of putting up these prolific passing numbers over his career. And so while it's never fair to bring up Marino's name when we're talking about other Dolphins quarterbacks like Ryan Tannehill, it's what people are familiar with and what people know. I do agree with him to a certain extent, though, that if he just wins games and they make another playoff appearance, then everybody's going to be really happy. Now, one would have to assume he'd have to put up pretty nice numbers in order to do that. So I know he does want to talk about the individual accomplishment, but those things tend to go hand in hand most times.
Right. And this offense should be in the top half of the league in points scored. They got over 22 a game last year. 25, I think, would be the magic number. If they can get to that, then you're going to have an offense that's top 14 in the league. From a skill position standpoint, you have elite talent, I would say, at receiver. Jarvis Landry, I asked today, where do you think this top three of receivers of you, Devontae Parker, and Kenny Stills should rank in the league? Top five, I said. He said, no, number one. And then obviously with Jay Ajayi, you have a bell cow back. With Julius Thomas, you have a guy who's had success in Gase's system. Big question, obviously, I know for both of us, is the offensive line. Today's first team group, with Mike Pouncey still being brought along slowly after the hip problems, was Craig Urbeck at center, obviously Tunsil and Juwan James at tackle, and your guards were Jermon Bushrod and Ted Larson. Larson, I've been told, is a front runner for one of the guard spots. Isaac Asiata, the rookie, will have a chance to compete there. Now, Asiata is older than most rookies, in his mid-20s, and so he was saying today that he feels more urgency to be a starter more quickly than perhaps more traditional rookie who's 21 or 22 years old. That being said, this is Larson's job to lose. I found it interesting that the Dolphins had no interest at all in Orlando Franklin. you know, pretty established offensive lineman, most recently with San Diego. Franklin signed with New Orleans today after working out for the Jets yesterday. So Miami is gambling the Ted Larson, who was a serviceable starter in Chicago and Arizona, is going to be a good guard here. The Dolphins don't believe they should be spending much money at guard. They made that decision months ago. They feel like the Patriots got away last year with having two guards earning a combined $1 million, slightly over $1 million. So they feel that that position is no longer one that they have to throw money at like previous Dolphins regimes did with Justin Smiley, as an example.
Yeah, that's a. I remember the offseason which Justin Smiley and Jake Grove came in.
Right, yeah, and, from Oakland to $28 million for Grove, and neither was quite what they expected. Grove in particular was a bust here.
Right, and it was always funny to me that, you know, there was supposed to be, you couldn't talk to anybody until free agency started. At the time, it was like midnight for the for the NFL free agency to begin. It was like 12:01 or 12:05 that the Dolphins announced that Jake Grove, or it was reported that Jake Grove had signed a multi-year deal with them for a lot of money. And, you know, not that we believe that these guys aren't having these conversations behind the scenes anyway, and tampering, I think we all know, exists. But I always found that funny that with Jake Grove, now the NFL has changed, so it's usually, 4 o'clock on a weekday in which they open up free agency. So it's a little more normal hours, but at the time it was midnight, and Jake Grove was the first signing of free agency in the NFL. And I was like, yeah, I think Bill Parcells might have spoken to his agent beforehand, right?
Right, and wouldn't you think it'd be easier to find quality guards than the Dolphins have had? I mean, look at all the guards they've cycled through, from Dale Murphy's kid to Jameel Douglas to Billy Turner. So many, you know, high picks invested, second, third, fourth round picks, and virtually none of them have panned out. So they had to go to Jermon Bushrod, who was a longtime tackle in the twilight of his career, make him a guard. And now they're going to Ted Larson, who's been something of a journeyman, and hoping that he'll be something of a stopgap this year. It's just amazing to me that they're always in this predicament at guard where they're never able to find, you know, all pro type talent or even anything close to it in the last decade.
Well, and then, you know, if we want to go back just not that long ago, but it is interesting that they had a actually, from a talent standpoint and a production standpoint on the field, a very good guard in Richie Incognito. But we know how that worked out. So they finally had a guard that was pretty darn good and actually ranks pretty highly in this top 400 list that I mentioned, and he's doing very well for the Bills. But, yeah, we don't need to get into that whole scandal and the whole thing there. But,
No. But the good news on the offensive line is Pouncey was cleared, so he's able to do football activities. He did some individual work today. They're not going to have him participate in team drills. In fact, he left the field after several minutes of doing individual drills just to do cardio work, which made Adam Gase crack that he's given him Jane Fonda tapes. I'm not sure Pouncey knew who Jane Fonda was, but regardless, so he's on track to play in the opener. The expectation is that he will play in the regular season opener. Whether we see him in preseason is very much in question. But Craig Urbeck will be the center if, God forbid, Pouncey cannot play. I can tell you that some players were not thrilled with Anthony Steen at center last year because they felt like he wasn't recognizing play calls quickly enough and shouting out his calls enough. So there's no question Urbeck would be the center if Pouncey has any sort of setback. And the Dolphins are braced for the possibility of Pouncey setbacks. They're still cautiously optimistic that he's going to be available at the start of the season and throughout the season, but they also know the hip is such a sensitive area that they're braced for the possibility that he could miss games this year, in spite of the fact that Pouncey keeps saying, you know, 16 games is the goal, 16 is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, and I think all of us are bracing for the idea that he's going to miss some time, much like you referenced before with Koumissi. I know I'm surprised that he's out for the year. Adam Gase admitted that he's surprised out for the year, but I don't think any of us anticipated based on his track record that he would play all 16 games, but we'll see. You can hope that they can buck the trend up to this point and then they can overcome these sorts of things. So we'll talk more about some of these storylines with the Dolphins coming out of training camp. Before the end of the show, we'll hear more from some of the players, but coming up next, I already mentioned this. MMQB's top 400 player list in the NFL. We'll tell you where the Dolphins land on it. And by the way, there were 12 Dolphins among the top 400, but you may be surprised about Ryan Tannehill's spot on the list. We'll explain next here on 790 The Ticket. I give a little bit. Ticket has it covered with daily and hourly reports. And this Saturday, join Curtis and myself for a live broadcast from FinScam from 8 to 10 a.m. Presented by Anajar and Levine. Accident attorneys, call 1-800-747-3. That's 1-800-747-3733. Sponsored by Coconut Creek Auto Mall, by Concierge Men's Wellness, by Sandbar Sports Grill in the Grove, and by Lexus of North Miami. Fin's coverage right here on AM 790 and FM 104.3 HD2. The Ticket. Welcome back here to 790. Greg Likens alongside Barry Jackson filling in for Josh Friedman. And, yeah, just to follow up on that, Curtis and I looking forward to being out broadcasting live from the third Dolphins practice on Saturday morning. So we encourage you to listen here on 790. But if you're going to be out there, come say hello. It should be a great environment. And I believe if our man Adam Beasley is correct, I think he and I both agree on this. So I'm not going to just completely put him on an island because I think so as well. But Barry, is Saturday's practice the first one they can have in pads? Adam and I were talking about that.
I believe that's the case, but I need to confirm that.
Okay, yeah, because he and I both felt the same way. I thought I remembered from years past that it was the third practice where they can wear pads for the first time. Either way, I'm looking forward to being out there, but especially if they put the pads on for the first time, and then we might be able to see a little bit more involving the line play that, you know, maybe we can draw some bigger conclusions than in the past in the offseason workup.
Right, and the Dolphins also announced today that there will be a scrimmage at Hard Rock Stadium at 11 a.m. on Saturday, August 5th. So a week from Saturday, we'll be able to see a scrimmage. Dolphins didn't have one last year because of stadium renovations. They had one at FIU a couple of years ago because of Hard Rock Stadium upgrades in August of that year. So, you know, that'll be a fun thing for people to attend for free.
It will be. Yeah, that FIU scrimmage, I remember that it was in question whether it would occur because of weather. There was some bad thunderstorms. The lightning alarm went off, so we got delayed. But eventually, they got through it.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Didn't help for those on deadline, right?
No, no. Yeah, it was an unfortunate night from that standpoint. But there were a lot of interesting things today. I think we talked about DeVante Parker making the big catch. Jakeem Grant, obviously, with a big play on a crossing route. A couple of other lineup things for people who wonder about it. Xavien Howard was the starting corner opposite Byron Maxwell. That appears to be his job to lose. Tony Lippett has told me that starting is really important to him, and he's not going to concede this job. He did have the four picks last year. Frankly, he was better than Howard last year in the limited sample size we saw of Xavien Howard. That said, Xavien Howard has the higher ceiling as a corner. I think everyone would agree with that. So this is Xavien Howard's job to lose, and he did play well in the spring. Ted Larson was the first-team guard. Nate Allen was at the first team at safety. The question is, come game nine, Greg, will Nate Allen be your first-team safety, or will it be T.J. McDonald when McDonald comes off suspension? I think most people in the league would say McDonald is a better player. Nate Allen was a competent starter for Philadelphia a few years ago, but he's been by and large a Raider backup the last couple of years, but not a lot of competitions. Anything strike you as a competition that you're eager to see work itself out?
Well, you talked about it before. I do think the defensive tackle scenario is something worth watching. Obviously, offensive guard is going to be intriguing just because it always is, right, with this Dolphins team. Other than that, I mean, I do think the kind of the fourth, fifth, and sixth, depending on how many they keep, wide receiver position will be intriguing. I know you've written a lot about Drew Morgan and the potential he has, and then obviously the expectations surrounding Leonte Carew and whether he's going to turn things around in his second year, Jakeem Grant as well, and some of the others that are in the mix. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I think, you know, you hit it on the head with the cornerback spot. I think that's probably where the most competition is. And then you've got a lot of names there. I think they've got some nice talent in terms of depth, but it's unclear who will play each role other than Byron Maxwell being one of the starters. So I think that's intriguing. And then finally, something that you've been writing a lot about, that linebacker spot. And I know you off the top of the show, you informed us about Mike Hull working with the first team today, but it seems like there's going to be a lot of folks working at that third linebacker spot with Lawrence Timmons and Kiko Alonso, of course.
Right, right. And I think it'd be surprising if McMillan doesn't win the third linebacker job. But I will tell you this. The Dolphins liked how Neville Hewitt played in the second half of the year. Dolphins official told me yesterday that he progressively got better as he played in the second half of last season. He ended up starting five games. And when I said to a Dolphins official yesterday, look, without Misa, you have only four linebackers. Do you need to sign a veteran now? The answer I got was no, we have five linebackers that we can count on, and Mike Hall is a fifth of those. So they believe that Mike Hall can be a capable defensive player and not merely a special teams contributor. In fact, there was some thought, and the Herald reported this, some thought last December to having Mike Hall play Mike linebacker as the starter in key December games and moving Kiko Alonso outside. They ultimately decided not to do that because they didn't want to disrupt Kiko that late in the season after playing middle linebacker all year. So they do believe Mike Hall can play. Now, all that being said, if they aren't satisfied with what they have, if McMillan shows growing pains, if Hewitt doesn't prove a lot over the next 3 weeks, then they could go looking for veteran linebacker help. They also want a long look at Deion Lacy, who's a CFL guy who got interest from the Jets and Patriots and a bunch of teams in the offseason. You know, the Dolphins have been looking for another CFL success story, Greg, like they had obviously with Cam Wake, who's a quintessential example of that. Last year, they tried a kid named Cleon Lang. He hung around on the practice squad for a while, didn't stick. This year, Lacy is their CFL project, a guy who's good in space, made a couple of nice plays today. I think he caught people's eyes today, so I would watch out for that name. And then besides linebacker, the other battle we didn't mention, you touched on corner, but specifically Werner, the former Tampa Bay and Tennessee corner, is going to be given every opportunity to beat out Bobby McCain. But Werner's one of those rare stories where you could have a guy who ends up starting in a nickel package or a guy who just doesn't make the team at all, right? I mean, it's right. A very wide disparity of what you could see Alteron Werner be. And the reason why he might not make the team is none of the $900,000 that he's due this year is guaranteed. So the Dolphins take zero cap hit, zero financial obligation if he stinks up the joint in August and doesn't make the team. But if he plays anything like the guy who was a Pro Bowler for Tennessee in 2013, then that would be an upgrade over Bobby McCain, who frankly has not been the playmaker the Dolphins thought. Remember, this was a guy at Memphis who picked off a lot of balls in college. You've talked a lot about him over the years. And one interception in 32 career games here and a passer rating against last year of 113. So he's simply been too erratic. Good athlete. I know he works hard. He's got upside. But Werner, at least on paper, would seem to be the better player if he's anything like he was in Tennessee rather than the version we saw in Tampa.
And you bring up the contract situation because that does play a role, especially when they're making these decisions on some of those last moves they're going to make on the roster in the 53. So that's going to be interesting. You're right. Bobby McCain was just an absolute playmaker in college, and we haven't seen that same thing from him yet. So we'll see. But as Adam Gase loves and preaches competition, he certainly has that bringing in Werner on the eve of training camp this time around in that secondary. All right, Barry, let's transition to this top 400 players list in the NFL. It was unveiled by the MMQB this week. And so just so we're all aware, the baseline and how they decided this, this is the description they provided. It says, ranking football players is an imperfect science. One position is far too different from the next. To counter that, the criteria for the MMQB 400 is, does player A do his job better or worse than player B does his job? If it was too close to call, then the player with the more significant job got the nod. A player's raw talent, cultivated skill set, and role within his team system were taken strongest into consideration, but it was all film-based. Very rarely were stats a factor. 99 times out of 100, the film shows what the stats tell anyway. The beauty is the film shows it within context. And they said that rookies and special teamers, not part of this. So, to get right down to it, there were 12 Dolphins players who made this list of top 400 players. Ndamukong Suh was the highest ranked player on this list at number 51. Mike Pouncey was the second highest ranked Dolphin at number 80 overall. Cam Wake then at 134, Rashad Jones at 142, Jarvis Landry at 178. The other players who made it, Laremy Tunsil at 182, Jay Ajayi at 186, Jordan Phillips 241, Lawrence Timmons 275, Julius Thomas, 327, Andre Branch, 330, and at 347, the final Dolphin represented was Ryan Tannehill, the 347th ranked overall player in the league. Many would ask, where does he reside among the quarterbacks? There were 23 quarterbacks that were ranked on this list. So only 23 quarterbacks made the top 400 players list according to MMQB. Ryan Tannehill ranked 22nd. And the only quarterback that came after him was Alex Smith. Now, we'll take a break and let everybody ruminate and think about this. But the notable QBs, at least in my opinion, where you can make some arguments that were ranked ahead of Ryan Tannehill, include Andy Dalton, Marcus Mariota, Sam Bradford, Carson Wentz, Jameis Winston, Carson Palmer, Joe Flacco. So those are some of the names ranked ahead of, and we can probably, you know, if you follow the NFL, you can figure out the other ones. But Barry, I'm going to let you think about it and let our audience think about it. When we come back, I want to get your reaction to Tannehill being ranked the 22nd best quarterback in the league by the MMQB. We've got that to get to and much more coming up next here on 790 The Ticket.